from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We are on day three of the government shutdown. Yesterday, my dad couldn't visit the Grand Canyon, a national park. A couple of weeks and the issues will be much bigger than that. New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman says they're bigger already, as big as you can get for a democracy. The shutdown, he says, with its gun-to-the-head demands, is a threat to democracy itself. Everybody's got their view. Friedman knows how to drive his home. This hour On Point, Tom Friedman on the shutdown. And he says, American democracy at stake. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What is at stake here? How did we get here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll go in a moment to Tom Friedman, the sound of Washington first. Here yesterday, talking with fellow Democrats, Congressman Steny Hoyer, Democrat, Maryland, House Minority Whip, dismissed the Republicans' piecemeal approach to restoring funding only to certain parts of the government, national parks, veterans programs.
The Republicans' piecemeal approach is a waste of time. It wasted critical time yesterday. And they are wasting more time today. It's a gimmick. It's a ploy. It's politics as usual. The Senate will never take up these bills.
Waste of time? Well, Kansas Republican Tom Hulskamp was having none of it, talking here with Sean Hannity on Fox News, saying Republicans are unified, the Democrats, he said, breaking apart.
Obamacare continues to destroy our health care system, and we're going to push and fight back. But we'll see the fissures. The breaks are on the other side. I saw it on the House floor tonight. They're getting desperate on the Democratic side, and they are losing this battle, Sean. We just need to keep pushing forward.
So who's getting desperate here? We go first today to Washington and the unfolding politics of the shutdown. Joining me now from the Capitol building in Washington is Robert Costa, Washington editor at the National Review. Bob Costa, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you.
So there's talk maybe somewhere, somehow the president says no negotiation. John Boehner says yes, please. But there's talk that maybe there's a deal, a grand bargain emerging out of the mist here before we get to the debt ceiling. Do you see that coming, Robert Costa, or just trouble?
On Wednesday night, Speaker Boehner went to the White House and he did float an idea about a grand fiscal bargain. But he was laughed at, according to my Democratic sources. It's really almost a pie in the sky idea right now. But it's on the table. House Republicans are scrambling to come up with some kind of idea, some plan to end this impasse.
So is there some room people can see beyond the president saying, I'm not going to negotiate with a gun to my head? Does that leave something to talk about? Or is it just a game of chicken about who's got the most damage and who folds first?
It's a great question. And the way I see this unfolding, according to my sources on Capitol Hill, is that this shutdown will probably last for a week or two, and it's going to then blend into the discussions on the upcoming debt limit. And so what emerges, perhaps, is some kind of fiscal deal that combines an extension of the debt limit with funding for the federal government, and then maybe Republicans can win some kind of small concession in a negotiation like that, like a repeal of the medical device tax.
Is that a grand bargain scenario, or that's just all of this just to take a tax off of medical devices?
Oh, it's being framed as a grand bargain within the House GOP because Speaker Boehner is really up against the wall with many of his conservative members. They're putting a lot of pressure on him to fight on. They come from districts that are very conservative. They're not getting a lot of consequences back home for this shutdown. And so Boehner has to balance that pressure from the right with the pressure to compromise, and that's why I think he's looking at some kind of bigger deal that maybe does everything in one fell swoop.
Where is the pressure to compromise coming from to Boehner? It's hard to see sometimes. We can see the pressure from the Tea Party. It is loud and it is clear. Where's the pressure to compromise?
What I like to frame it as is there's a silent majority of sorts within the House GOP. You always hear about the 30 to 40 vocal conservatives. They really drive the conversation in the press and they drive it inside the House. But there are about 100 to 150 Republicans, these rank and file Republicans from more moderate districts who are getting calls back in their home districts about the shutdown. And this whole situation has given them a headache. They're quietly telling Boehner, maybe we should try to resolve this quickly. And I heard they met with Speaker Boehner at the Capitol on Wednesday, bringing that message right to him.
So if John Boehner wants to come to some agreement, maybe even fold, what does he need to do that? What would be a big enough fig leaf to let the Speaker do that that the Tea Party would accept?
Sometimes at the Capitol, you never really know if there is a fig leaf that that block of 30 to 40 conservatives would accept. But at the same time, you know Speaker Boehner at this point, for political reasons, cannot move the so-called clean CR to the floor, a clean spending bill that funds the government. There'd be almost a revolt that could damage his, even cripple his speakership should he do a clean CR. So he needs to get either medical device tax repeal. He may need to include the Vitter Amendment, which bans subsidies as part of Obamacare for congressional staffers. That's what he's looking at.
And what about the other scenario? We heard Congressman Holzkamp there from Kansas saying, look, it's the Democrats who are feeling the pressure. Can you see a scenario in which the Tea Party impulse keeps the Republican Party somehow together and it's the Democrats who ultimately have to fold? Or is that just bravado at this point?
It's definitely a belief on the right. And there's a real sense right now in Washington that both sides are not actually trying to negotiate a settlement, but they're digging in and they're looking to see who will blink first. And Republicans, especially conservatives, think Democrats will cave, and eventually they may be able to do some kind of things like they did in 2011. Remember, Republicans have this precedent, at least in their mind, that in 2011, during the fiscal impasse then, they were able to get sequestration in the Budget Control Act. Now, that was a different political climate. Democrats are probably on much better political playing ground right now because they just won the White House in 2012. But Republicans are hoping for a similar type deal to emerge.
Bob Costa, Washington editor at the National Review. It's always good hearing from you. Thanks very much for joining us, Bob.
Thank you.
Here's sound from what we're up against right now. Harry Reid, this was yesterday on the Senate floor, saying the GOP was holding a gun to the heads of the American people.
No matter how many times they try to extort the American people and the Democrats here in the Senate, we're not going to relitigate the health care issue. We're not going to do that. If they have problems with that bill, we will be happy to sit down and talk to them about a reasonable approach to do it. But we're not going to do it with a gun to the heads of the American people.
But Speaker Boehner saying, hey, all we want to do is have a little discussion, a little fairness. Let's negotiate.
All we're asking for here is a discussion and fairness for the American people under Obamacare. I would hope that the President and my Democrat colleagues in the Senate would listen to the American people and sit down and have a serious discussion about resolving these differences.
What's at stake here? Maybe something very big. Tom Friedman wields a powerful pen, laptop. He's helped shape many people's and leaders' views of the world for decades now from his post at the New York Times. Winner of 3 Pulitzer Prizes. His most recent book, That Used to Be Us, How America Fell Behind, The World It Invented, and How We Can Come Back, is out in paperback. And this week, he writes in his column that democracy itself is at stake in the shutdown. He joins us from Washington. Tom Friedman, welcome back to On Point.
Good to be with you, Tom.
You say President Obama don't yield. Why?
Because I think there's a very simple principle at stake here, and it's the principle that really is the bedrock of our whole constitutional system. And that is that we hold elections, we elect legislators, they enact laws. Those laws get tested by the Supreme Court, and the issue is then settled. And that if a tiny minority is allowed to basically put a fiscal gun to the country's head and say that thing that you won 2 elections over, that thing that was affirmed by the Supreme Court, we still don't like it, and we simply will not fund the government unless that thing, which in their case is health care, is abandoned. Then we have a system, Tom, where nothing is ever settled. What's to prevent Democrats from winning the House next time around and under a Republican president or Republican Senate say, you know that B-1 bomber you approved or that war you launched or that bill you passed? We're not happy with it, and we're not going to pass the debt ceiling unless that is removed. You will have a government where nothing is ever settled. And that is a prescription for disaster.
So is it process at stake, or is it your headline, democracy at stake in this shutdown?
It's democracy. It's, I've been on your show a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm a pretty centrist, person. I was for a Grand Bargain. I was a Simpson Bowles guy. Yeah. We've had this discussion.
Yep.
But this isn't about any of those things. This is about how the system works. And when people say, well, we've had shutdowns before, that was about the budget. That was a fight about dollars and cents in the budget. One wanted more, one wanted less. This is about a third side issue. It could be whether you paint the White House pink or not. You know, if any minority decides it can use the budgeting process to get a third issue imposed on the country after it lost two national elections and a Supreme Court decision, then Katie, bar the door.
You think we're really there? I mean, we've had centuries of democracy here. We are the world's great democracy. It's kind of out-of-body experience to hear, to read somebody like you saying, you know, if we're not careful, maybe right now democracy itself is imperiled in this country. Really? Is this just...
Yeah, I do think so, Tom, because I think what's happened is three trends that I and you have been tracking now for probably the last 20 years all converge and reach a tipping point at the same time. The first is gerrymandering, where we now have Democrat and Republican districts where, thanks to Google Maps, we can now do it down to the atomic level.
Yep.
You know, where Mrs. Ashbrook can be in one district and Mr. Ashbrook can be in another.
Yeah.
We have incredible money in politics, thanks to Citizen United. And we have Democratic media and Republican media. You put them all together and you have a very different cocktail.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the shutdown and our democracy, hardball politics, and majority rule with New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman. Headline on his piece this week, Our Democracy is at Stake. People looking at this from all angles right now. Tea Party's got its own view, driving hard. President says he won't negotiate with a gun to his head. Tom Friedman joins us from Washington, and you know very well, Tom, that the line there from those who are most committed to this is, look, this is our power. We're within the Constitution. We haven't gone out of bounds. Yes, you know, we're playing the edges here, but it's within the law, within the bounds of the American system.
Well, it certainly is within the bounds of the American system to try what they're doing. No one's going to come up and arrest them for that. But it would undermine the American system if they succeeded in what they're doing.
Why?
It's in the bounds of the system to shout fire in a theater, I suppose.
Mm.
You know, why what, Tom?
Well, why would this?
Why? Because what I said before. Because basically,
we'd always be back here.
Yeah, it means nothing settled. It means anytime a minority, because we have this constant debt ceiling issue coming up regularly, anytime any minority, left, right, or center, decides that there is a law on the book. This is a law that was passed, that was signed, and was affirmed by the Supreme Court. And anytime a minority decides that there's a law they don't like, they will use the debt ceiling issue to shut down the government, inflict enormous pain on people and our economy until and unless they are satisfied. It means nothing is settled. Do you know what that means for our allies? Can you imagine being now an ally of the United States?
It would mean nothing is settled.
Nothing is settled. Right. It would mean a very, you know, people don't really, there's something really at stake in what is going on here, because if we go weak as a country, your kids won't just grow up in a different America. They'll grow up in a different world. It'll be a world ordered by Russia or China, or most likely nobody at all. There's a lot at stake here.
You quote John Boehner saying, look, all the Senate has to do is say yes, and the government is funded tomorrow. That's you know, right. Voice of reason. Just say yes.
Just hand over the money and nobody gets hurt, as Dana Milbank pointed out. Just hand over the money. Nobody gets hurt here.
That's okay. The hostage kind of scenario.
Yeah, and that's just not how a serious country governs itself. But because I cover foreign affairs.
Yep.
It's exactly how Hezbollah, a minority party in Lebanon, has managed to intimidate and pervert Lebanese democracy. And by the way, do you know what Hezbollah means? It means the party of God. They have God on their side, but they also have guns and bazookas on their side. And they use that in order to intimidate an entire democracy.
I mean, isn't that quite a jump from Hezbollah to Tea Party?
Not in the least, okay? They're both using intimidatory tactics to override, okay, override the will of the majority. We should call this by its real name. This is serious. This is not a joke. And this is not a test. The implications of this succeeding, I think, are incredibly, incredibly dangerous.
We're going to walk through the reasons. Tom Friedman of the New York Times is with us. Our democracy is at stake is his headline this week. Let's bring our listeners in. Marge in East Colles, Vermont. Marge, you're on the air with Tom Friedman.
It's a pleasure to be on your show. I just wanted to say I'm mad as hell and I can't take it anymore.
We've heard that before.
I think John Boehner should be impeached. He took an oath of office to uphold the Constitution of the United States and, by extension, you know, the good of the country, and yet all he's doing is preserving his own political behind. And I think that's, it's blatantly wrong.
He's listening to very impassioned elected representatives in his own party. Is that wrong, Marge?
When they're just a minority of his party, yeah. I'm talking about his motivation.
Yeah. Minority of his party, and yet they've got all this power. That takes it. Marge, I appreciate your call. Tom Friedman, that takes us to why this might be going on. And you lay out what you say are these three reasons: gerrymandering, big money, partisan media. I mean, let's look at those. Gerrymandering, that goes centuries back. It goes back to Massachusetts, right where I'm sitting now. It's not like it's a new thing. So what's new with drawing political lines for political advantage?
You know, what's new, Tom, with all three of these is a difference of degree that's become a difference of kind. So, you know, Politico had a nice summary this morning. According to David Wasserman, I'll just read these few lines, who analyzes House races for the Cook Political Report, 79 of the 236 House Republicans serving during the last shutdown, that was 17 years ago under President Clinton, they came from districts Clinton won. So 79 came from districts Clinton won, so they were much more amenable ultimately to doing a deal. Today, 17 of the 232 House Republicans are in districts that Obama won in 2012. It's mean gerrymandering now, as I say, is down to the atomic level. Mr. and Mrs. Ashbrook could be in different congressional districts, depend on your voting patterns. Mm-hmm. We can do it that fine-grained. I exaggerate, but you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you have Republican districts getting more radically more white and Republican, Democrat districts getting radically more diverse and Democratic, and therefore the only election is the primary. And the only way an incumbent can lose in a Republican district is someone to his right, never someone to the center. And that gives us this situation now where people doing this not only can do it, but they can be insulated politically from the impact. On money, thanks to Citizens United, which basically said corporations are people just like Tom Ashbrook and Tom Friedman. Mm. They can give as much as we want. We saw in the last race, one man, Sheldon Adelson, a casino magnate in Las Vegas, was able to keep one candidate, Newt Gingrich, in the race far beyond his base of support by simply writing check after check to him. That then kept him nipping at the heels of Mitt Romney, pushing him farther to the right, never enabling Romney to pivot to the center. And of course, media, we have liberal media. We have MSNBC and the like, and we have conservative media, you know, spearheaded by Fox and all their associated websites. I can live, if I want, as a reader inside my own media, completely marinated by that, and as a result, only be confirmed in my views and never feel I need to come on NPR and Tom Ashbrook's show and actually persuade your viewers of the rightness of my position and the wrongness of theirs. Why should I? Rush Limbaugh said I'm right.
You know, here's a little piece. I mean, you say that media goes to bed. It goes to bed in all kinds of directions, but it certainly puts people on the spot. There's just a few Republicans now, as you point out, in districts that can flow back and forth. The hard right knows where they are and puts the pressure on them. This was last night, Tom, on Fox News. Sean Hannity put up the photos and names of the 18 Republican congressmen who said they could support voting on a clean continuing resolution that not tied to defunding Obamacare. Most of these in districts where there's still some fluidity and who could win. Here's Sean Hannity.
I'm going to put up again the 18 Republicans that have indicated their knees are getting a little weak and their spines are beginning to crumble here. There they are. There are their names. And again, HannityLive.FoxNews.com, all the contact information if you want to get in touch if one of these guys is your congressman.
Boy, that's pressure. That's national television, and these guys right there up on the bullseye.
Yeah, we'll break your knees if you don't your campaign, your electoral future.
And, I mean, break your knees. He's saying call them. That's not break your knees.
Yeah, he's saying call them. Yeah, that's what I mean, metaphorically.
Yeah.
And I think that, look, that's what we're up against. It's these kind of intimidatory tactics. And there's only one way that it stops. And it stops when good, sane Republicans stand up and say, this is not on. We're not going to allow this. I, John Boehner, they pay me $175,000 a year, whatever it is. It ain't worth this. It isn't worth abandoning all my principles. What does everyone tell you? They say, you know, John Boehner, actually kind of a centrist Republican, more of a Bush 1 Republican, comes from Ohio, big family, whatnot. He doesn't believe this. What is he holding on? Can this be fun? Can you be enjoying this, being the whipping boy of a radical minority with Eric Cantor, you know, standing behind, ready to put a knife in your back the minute you move? I mean, who is it? Can he not get another job? You know, I mean, is it worth all of that to go down as maybe the most feckless, worst speaker of the House in House history? Why not just stand up and get in their face? I bet they'd be shocked at the number of Republicans who say to him, Boehner, thank you. I'm with you.
But those members in his caucus are responding to voters in these districts. You may not like how they're drawn, Tom, but there they are, and they've got real American citizen voters in them, and they clearly are standing behind this sort of last stand Republican Tea Partiers and saying, you go, guys.
Sure. I mean, look, they're responding, and why are the voters feeling the way they do? If we just talk about the issues irrespective of this electoral fight here, you know, there are certainly issues that are very legitimate from a conservative point of view. You can have a different view on health care, how we should go about it, etc. But also, you know, those voters are shaped by Sean Hannity. I mean, if you watch the Fox coverage in the last 2 days about the health care, every tiny glitch, you know, if somebody's, you know, screen doesn't pop up with the immediate government health care site, you know, it gets, you know, huge play. The whole thing is projected as a giant fiasco, when in fact we're doing something very complicated, very important. Over time, mistakes will be addressed.
You're talking about the implementation of the health care reforms.
Of Obamacare.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you watch Fox News, and what they're doing is making people stupid, okay? And that, I don't mind being, you know, tendentious you know, being for one side or another, taking a conservative view of this. But when you're out there making people stupid, it's just, it's really reprehensible.
Well, but we talked with a pretty smart guy the other day, Earl Black, a longtime big watcher of American politics from down at Rice University. And he said, you know, let us remember that this health care reform was pushed through on strictly partisan lines. He said it's a shame that it wasn't pushed through like some of our big reforms in the past, where you got at least some wing of the opposing party to come on board, some kind of consensus. He was pointing back and saying, in the origins of this legislation, we have to concede there's a problem.
Well, I would say let's ask why that was the case. First of all, let's talk about Obamacare for a second. Okay. This is based on a Republican idea implemented in the state you're sitting in, Massachusetts. Okay, so Obama
by
said,
Mitt Romney,
by Mitt Romney. Obama's saying, look, what I'd really want, what my base really wants, is a single payer system, but I can't do that. So I'm actually going to start with the Republican approach to this, a market based approach, using the free market insurance system as the foundation for this. But secondly, you know, what we're seeing here, Tom, is the net effect of the fact that the Republican Party and the Democratic Party used to be coalitions. The Republican Party was a coalition of Northern liberal Republicans and Southern and Western, and the Democrats had Southern Democrats and, you know, Northern and liberal Western and Central State Democrats. What's happened is, of course, the Southern Democrats have been purged or left the Democratic Party. The Northern liberals have been purged or left the Republican Party. So when in the old days, the parties had to negotiate with themselves before they negotiated with each other and therefore came to more centrist positions, now that doesn't happen at all. So you get something like you get on health care, where the vote is simply 100-0. You know, one side 100.
We've got to keep track of what's going on right there. I'm talking with Tom Friedman, joins us from Washington today, columnist for the New York Times. He says our democracy is at stake. Let me go to Bob in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Bob, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
And Tom, I think it's a lot worse than what you're saying. We already know everything Tom's saying. Let's get into it a little deeper. These people actually hire thugs to kill people and harass people who are environmentalists and who are trying to do work in for labor rights.
I mean, what are you talking about, Bob? That's a pretty serious charge. Like what? Where?
Oh, it's very serious. It's very serious. Out here in the Midwest, you have basically people who are acting like they own the world. And they get to kick people around and push people around and threaten people. And it happens all the time.
Bob, I don't know your experience exactly, but we know the passions get really high around this. Send me something on what you're talking about in particular, because I don't know what that detail is. I appreciate your call. One more right here. Pat in Norwood, Massachusetts. Pat, you're on the air. Hello, Pat, you're on. Well, let's go to Mike in Nashville, Tennessee. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
I believe the loss. You remember in the days when you would campaign against a guy that was an inside the Beltway guy, you know, the professional politician. In my opinion, that's the thing that's lost today. The professional politician that would throw a little pork your way or whatever, but the government ran as it should run.
But, Mike, we heard for years about how bad that was. Let's have term limits. Let's get those guys out. Let's get earmarks out.
No way is it. I tell you what, we complained so much that I'm sure people now are looking like, you know, a guy you may have hated. I mean, I'm a staunch liberal Democrat, but I pray that the Republican wing that is now being forgotten, like the Tea Party represents, in my opinion, a middle class white voter and below. Now they have a voice.
Well, what's wrong with that? Why shouldn't a middle class voter of any kind?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but they are the faction that not only do they not want help from the government, they don't want anybody to have help from anyone, period, nothing. And they will go, it's just like Tom Friedman had said, if Fox News or whoever says it so, they will burn with the plane to the ground as long as they're following the script that could take us all over a cliff.
Mike, I appreciate your call as well. Thank you very much for calling in there from Nashville. Tom Friedman, we lost you for a moment. We had a caller in Oklahoma saying they're beating us out here. You hear Mike saying, they'll just take us over a cliff. I mean, how do we steady the boat here, Tom? Because some of the things you're pointing to are pretty deeply baked in the cake at this point.
Well, I think, you know, we steady the boat in two steps. One is that this motion of a clean CR, a clean funding bill, unencumbered by, you know, these demands, has to be put to a vote in the House. Everyone says it will pass with majority Democratic, but also with Republican support. Mm. I think we have to establish that principle. And then we have to move on to what we need, which is and have needed for 4 years, is a grand bargain.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the shutdown and our democracy, hardball politics and majority rule with New York Times columnist Tom Friedman. He's written about the world and the country for decades now. A lot of people read a lot of Tom Friedman over the years. His latest, That Used to Be Us, How America Fell Behind the World It Invented and How We Can Come Back, is now out in paperback. His column this week saying very plainly that there's more on the line here than the Affordable Care Act. Headline, Our Democracy is at Stake. He says to President Obama, do not negotiate with this kind of Capitol Hill gun to your head. Wrong thing to do for the democracy. Tom, all kinds of comments online here, Twitter and Facebook and everywhere else. Here's one from the website. Lab says, Tom Friedman's politicking. Says, I don't like the way the Republicans are using their power of the purse, but they have a right to use it and be voted out next time. Friedman saying that it's the end of democracy undermines our Constitution, Tom.
What are you talking? Yes, they have a right to say whatever they want. Technically, they have a right to do exactly what they're doing. But that doesn't mean that it's the right thing for the country to do to accept this kind of extortion. I'm not saying they don't have a right. They have a right to say whatever they want. Sean Hannity has a right to put up on his, you know, TV screen the pictures of 18 centrist Republicans who are appalled by this. I have the right to write my column. But the system also has rules, okay? And the rules are that majority rules. And so, yes, I have a right to try to game it so my minority rules. I do have that right. But that doesn't mean it's right for the country to allow that to happen, because the long-term implications of that is their minority rules today and my minority rules tomorrow. And then nothing is ever settled.
And it just doesn't work. John in Concord, Massachusetts is calling. John, you're on with Tom Friedman.
Yes, hi, Tom. Thanks very much. I'm a centrist calling. Don't hear a lot of those these days. And my concern with Obamacare was that it started with tort reform being taken off the table, number one. And number two, it was passed with the demon pass process, which is not usually used in Congress. So it's a tremendous piece of legislation, like you said earlier, and thank you for saying it, without compromise on both sides of the aisle. On the other hand, certainly the Republicans are holding our country hostage with this current process. I think there needs to be compromise on both sides of the aisle. And in particular, if clean legislation were passed, but only that one piece where there's a little bit of pork, where our congressional representatives don't have to be forced into Obamacare, I think that's a point that the Republicans make, which makes sense.
John, but what about Tom Friedman's point that if you compromise now, you're compromising with hostage-taking? It's an end to majority rule, and we end up a paralyzed democracy, maybe no democracy at all.
I mean, do you remember Ronald Reagan compromised with Tip O'Neill? That's the example.
No, that's not the analogy, okay?
Tom, what are you saying?
Tip O'Neill wasn't saying, I'll compromise if you get rid of Star Wars, okay? They were having a budget fight. It was about numbers, dollars and cents. I'll give you this, you give me that. Tip O'Neill was not demanding an end to the Star Wars program in return for agreeing to a budget compromise. Totally false and phony analogy.
So this bringing everything into the game, a different world here.
I mean, yeah, my next demand is I'll agree to this budget, provided NPR is taken off the air.
And on.
Yeah, that's where do you think this goes, folks? Do you think it just stops here? And do you think it just stops with Republicans doing it? That liberals won't try it?
How do we get out of this knot we're in? I mean, the things that have put us here did not happen by accident. The redistricting, gerrymandering, that was a big long-term project that people put a lot of effort into, very deliberate. As you say, it can be done very well now. And now it's kind of surrounded, no doubt, by the very money politics you're talking about and partisan media that you're talking about. So it's hard to undo it if we're sitting at the cusp of maybe losing the thing we'd like to think the most about, our democracy. How do we begin to walk it back, Tom?
Well, this is a totally separate issue, so I don't want to be confused with the principle of democracy we're talking about. But as you know, because we talked about it, I was for a third party in the last election.
Mm-hmm.
If there were six independent senators elected and 30 independent House members elected, centrists, we wouldn't be having this, bro, because they would hold the balance of power and we could actually change some of these crazy partisan laws.
But that's not the situation that we're sitting in. Here's John Boehner.
No, you asked me how we get out of it,
well,
and I'm telling you, the only way we get out of it is if we, the people, lead, okay, and we elect people who are ready to lead the country in a different way and to speak out against this, to stand up against this kind of behavior.
But the facts show that we now have these districts, and there are solid Democrat districts, of course, as well.
Yeah.
But districts where people are...
Well, California has done, nonpartisan redistricting for its state legislature, and that's, of course, what we need nationally. You look at these districts, they look like amoebas, they look like strange pieces out of the natural world, they look like op art. They're ludicrous if you actually look at them on a map.
You point to the recall election in Colorado of two state senators who voted for gun reform and say this is the path we may be on soon if we don't get the money out of politics.
Yeah. I mean, look, they had money on their side as well, no question. But it was the whole idea, because I voted on one narrow issue. in the way that one narrow interest group didn't like, that interest group brought some $400,000 to bear. This is state legislatures. This is not a congressional district. This is a state house of Colorado. So imagine when you focus that kind of hot laser beam, you know, on one issue and on two Democratic legislators who wanted to a better form of gun registration. Well, you can imagine what you can do.
But do you see any incentive out there today for big money to back out of politics, to back off? Sheldon Adelson or the NRA or Michael Bloomberg? No. What's the incentive to back off?
The only incentive is for us to elect people that will pass a law that will override Citizens United. That's the only way out. We got into this the long, hard way. Unfortunately, Tom, we can only get out of it the long, hard way.
Let's go to Lana in Scandia, Minnesota. Lana, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Tom Friedman.
Hi. Congress is asserting the will of the people. The people of the country have spoken loud and clear. They do not want Obamacare. They do not want death panels saying you can't have treatment for your condition. You just need to suffer and die. This is an important point.
Hey, Lana, what about the re-election of President Obama, where Obamacare was a big issue in that election, and he was handsomely re-elected? How does that fit into your narrative of what's going on,
well,
your story?
He made false promises to the people.
Well, he said he would stand up for the Affordable Care Act.
Called the Cheap Care Act, because you're not going to get a higher quality of care, and it's going to cost more.
He
made false promises. That's how he got in.
What about majority rule, Lana? Tom Friedman says, look, it's a faction of one party that's holding everything up here. That's not the way the country is supposed to work.
That's what a democracy is supposed to be. Majority of the people. This country is supposed to be governed by the people, for the people, of the people.
Okay, Lana, thank you for your call. I mean, it's always hard to know what exactly to do there, Tom. You look at the numbers in the last election, in the presidential race, we saw what they were. Look at the straight numbers, Republican and Democrat vote. If it weren't for the way districts were drawn in 2010, we might have had a different outcome even in the House.
Right, but exactly. I mean, what poll is Lana looking at? You know what I mean? The president won in a national election electoral votes. The president won the popular vote. If you want to just take a referendum on every issue, the president and his health care plan won on a popular vote, and it won a popular vote of the Supreme Court. So, you know, the fact that there's one other criteria, gerrymandered Republican districts that he didn't win, I suppose, but to claim that is the Congress, that is the will of the people, is just stuff and nonsense.
What's pushed us into this? I mean, I realize you're looking at redistricting and at money and at partisan media as the vehicles for locking this up. But what's the fundamental, cross purposes or clashing impulses that have got us?
Well, I think,
into this
pickle? It's a very good question, Tom. And I think, the deeper, question here and here, we can something you and I've talked about before,
yep,
is that we're fighting over a shrinking pie. Okay, that's half the problem, I think, and that there really is a sense of zero sum. If I give you healthcare, you're taking it out of my pocket, and that's where the absence of a growth agenda for which both parties, I think, are to blame is a big problem. But the other is something that's central to our book, plug, which is that to be in the middle class today is just a lot harder, Tom. President Clinton at the 1992 convention famously said, if you work hard and play by the rules, you should be in the middle class. And unfortunately today, because of the merger of globalization and the IT revolution, a lot of big technology changes, unfortunately today, if you want to be in the middle class, you have to work harder, you have to relearn quicker, you have to re-engineer yourself more often, and you have to write and rewrite the rules. And it's I think people, and I have enormous sympathy for this, are really feeling the stress of maintaining the American dream, let alone passing it on to their kids. You put that together with a shrinking pie, and I think it produces a lot of anxiety and a lot of anger, which percolates and boils all of these other things.
Republicans like to say, well, then come over here. We've got the growth agenda. Throw off the traces and off we go, Reagan style, grow, grow, grow.
Well, The growth agenda in the age of globalization, the IT revolution, is so different than just – and so much more complicated than just cutting taxes. By the way, we've tried that, and it hasn't gotten us anywhere near the kind of growth we need. It's very complicated. It involves education, infrastructure, the right rules, the right government-funded research. It's a very complicated agenda. And that's the conversation that we should be having, and then we should be engineering the grand bargain we need to promote that agenda. You know, countries that don't think about the future tend not to do well there. And if you don't start every day saying, what world are we in? What are the things we need to thrive in that world? And therefore work and re-engineer backwards, therefore what regulations, infrastructure, tax policy do we need to enable more of our people to thrive? You know, we're going to be in a terrible situation because you can grow without a plan. But if you start cutting without a plan, you're going to hit bone. You're going to hit artery. You're going to do serious damage to the country. And that's what we're doing.
Tom, what about the president? I mean, part of the role of the president is to lead in difficult times. How do you assess his job in painting the picture, giving the country a narrative of where we are, bringing people on board? Is he doing enough, well enough? I mean, or is it manifest that he's not?
You know, I am both sympathetic and critical, as you know, of President Obama. We've had an uneasy, you know, five years. What I'm sympathetic for him on is I do think he has been up against a very different Republican Party than the Tip O'Neill, Ronald Reagan era. He's been up against people who really wanted to destroy him from day one and really wanted to delegitimize his presidency. And I'm sorry, it's the facts. At the same time, he started off with health care and redistribution, a redistributive agenda, rather than growing the pie. And he keeps pivoting back, saying, I'm pivoting back to economics now, I'm pivoting back to jobs. But to me, that's where he should have started. He could have done it hand in hand with, you know, healthcare. But, you know, at a time when we're just having very slow growth, not coming to the country with a growth agenda from day one and sticking to it and building a consensus around that. He may still not have gotten the Republicans, by the way. I'm not convinced he would have. But I think he would be in a better place, and I would certainly feel better about it.
Of course, it was a tough spot to start a growth agenda. He was going to save the ship agenda was job one. But anyway, point taken. Elkhorn, Wisconsin. John, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hello, Tom. I appreciate your introspection on the issues, but we have a crisis on our hands with the government shutdown and the pending debt ceiling. Is it time to have a march on Washington and just surround the Congress until they actually do something? What can we do?
I love that idea because basically, you know, we're all sitting here like mutes. You know, watching this spectacle play out, and it's our lives. After all, it's our kids' lives. You know, what's so frustrating, and thank you for the nice Midwest call. I'm from Minnesota, as you know. We're kicking the country around like it's a football, but it's not a football. It's a Fabergé egg. We can break this. We can drop it. It'll crack. And if we keep stressing it enough, and I think the only people, you know, as an author, where I really get optimism, people say, you know, you're always a sunny Minnesota optimist. Where does your optimism come from? And I always say, you know, if you want to be an optimist about America, stand on your head, because the country looks so much better from the bottom up than the top down. The country is still full of people who just didn't get the word. They didn't get the word from Sean Hannity. They didn't get the word that China's going to eat our breakfast. They didn't get the word that Germany's going to eat our lunch. And they go out and they start stuff and fix stuff and collaborate on stuff in cities and in states. And that's actually what's keeping us afloat as a country, giving us that 2% growth coming up from the bottom at the time when the federal government has been not an enabler but a real disenabler, you know, because of this paralysis. But it is not equal right now. The Republican Party is off the rails. And we cannot govern this country without a sane opposition and a sane ruling party. And that party is in a bad place. It has gone off the rails.
You know, for a long time, there was a sense of threat from abroad or a competition in the world between communism and capitalism. The whole Cold War dynamic, it seems to me, would have kept the country from going this way because we would be embarrassed of the spectacle. You know, maybe some country somewhere would flip over to the Soviet Union because they see the U.S. in such turmoil. But these days, it doesn't seem as though Washington thinks about that kind of issue as well, how the world looks at all this, Tom.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think any of this would happen during the Cold War. That was a serious time. You couldn't mess around like this. You couldn't do Monica Lewinsky in the Cold War, and you couldn't do this kind of shenanigan because we were up against people who had a real gun pointed to our head all of our heads a nuclear weapon. But in the long run, this makes us a much less able and reliable partner for countries around the world, both for our enemies and our friends, to note. And I really worry about it. Look, President Obama's had to cancel or at least delay his trip to Asia. So mm-hmm. So what's going to happen? So China will dominate the APEC meeting out in Asia. We won't be there. Our Secretary of State, our very able Secretary of State, will be there, but our president won't. People take note, and over time, it has consequences.
And China, no champion of democracy. Meanwhile, people will be watching our democracy at home and saying, "What's up with that, America?"
Everything we're doing, Tom, is how a great country becomes ungreat.
I don't know where we are in this story exactly. I hope we're not as close to the cusp of something bad as you're suggesting here, but it is a serious time that needs to be taken seriously. Tom Friedman writes about it with his usual compelling approach. In his latest column, the headline is "Our Democracy is at Stake." His book, That Used to Be Us, is out in paperback. Tom Friedman, today in Washington. Thanks very much for being with us, Tom.
A pleasure always, Tom. Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. You can continue the conversation at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.